told only a handful of friends the true story in the beginning, because there's a massive fear here that people would judge you. And because it was illegal, that people would tell you that you're doing something wrong. So there was, and there still is, a stigma attached to it. Thankfully, I feel it has lessened greatly since I traveled 8.5 years ago now. But at the time, I was terrified about people knowing my real story. So we had a B story.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Hayley, as you know, and Catherine is unable to join us this week. Bit sad about that, but we hope she'll be back with us soon. Right, so we're going to be speaking with Jen Ryan, and Jen is a campaigner for TFMR Ireland and LMC Bereavement Support. She's a mum who experienced her own TFMR in 2012, before the laws changed in Ireland, allowing women access to abortions up to 12 weeks of pregnancy. So we really wanted to speak with Jen about this because we know that things have changed, but how much have they changed? So welcome, Jen. It's really nice to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your personal experience and how that's kind of evolved and what you're involved in?
I fell pregnant in 2012 and we were delighted. It was my second baby. So, you know, that bit of reassurance. I already had done this once and I knew what to expect, I suppose. And the pregnancy went fine. I had no issues at all. And then we went for our anomaly scan. So in Ireland, the anomaly scans are between 20 and 22 weeks. Mm-hmm. Most hospitals give you a 12-week scan as well as a dating scan, mm-hmm. but not all. And not all hospitals actually do an anomaly scan. That has since thankfully changed though. So we went along, I was 22 weeks and we were just so excited to see the baby. We were going to find out the sex and, you know, obviously make sure everything was well. But unfortunately, you know, we didn't leave that scan with that sort of news. Mm. We'd gone in and the sonographer obviously had seen stuff on the scan and said, look, I need to get a consultant to see you, which I straight away knew there was a problem because the consultant doesn't see you unless there is a problem. So we went and then saw the consultant that same evening. And we were really lucky that everything could be done in the same evening, because a lot of times you're sent home for a few days till they can get you an appointment. So, you know, we were lucky that that could happen. And the consultant, she was a fetal medicine expert, went through the scan. Like, she explained to her, she goes, I was scanning in silence because I'm going to be taking measurements and looking at stuff. When I go through everything, I will speak to you then. So we were scanned in pretty much silence for about half an hour. And by then we knew it was really bad. Like, she asked a few questions about, have you had any gushes or leaking of fluid and stuff like that? And at the end of it, she said, it's bad news, guys. Mm. Because it's very hard to see anything on the scan because there's no fluid around your baby. Okay. So that's why it had taken her so much longer to scan, because it was so hard to see anything. She said, your baby does not have any kidneys.
Okay.
She goes, I can see the arteries going into where the kidney should be, but there's no kidneys. And on top of that, your baby has a very severe form of spina bifida. It starts very high up between the shoulder blades and it's a complete V down to the base of the back. And these are fatal conditions. Your baby will not live. Mm. And we were floored. Like, you know, we were expecting bad news because we had been scanned in silence for half an hour. But to hear it confirmed was heartbreaking. But she was thankfully, you know, she was very straight to the point about it and very clear. And she goes, you have two options. You can continue and I will scan you weekly or fortnightly. And once there's no heartbeat, we can induce you then. Or you can go to term, whichever, you know, comes closest. Mm. We'll induce you then when you're near full term. Or you can travel to England for a termination. Mm. So that was kind of the end of that conversation. We were sent home that night and we were coming in the next day for a CVS. She wanted to do testing just to see, was there any chromosomal abnormalities? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I couldn't get an amniocentesis because there was no fluid. So we just went home and, you know, we just rang our families and told them what had happened. And, you know, everyone was just in disbelief. And we went in the next day anyway. My mother attended then with me as well for support. Mm-hmm. And we had the CVS and they just said, you know, you have a couple of days now until the results come in. So have a think what you want to do. But in our mind, you know, given we had been told how horrendous it was, and especially the spina bifida, like it was a fear that she'd be in pain the longer we continued. So while we had that time to think about it, we were thinking that we would travel. That was the Wednesday that we had that testing done, so the Monday. So it was 5 days before we got the results. And they rang and they said, look, there's nothing on the results. Everything is normal. The preliminary ones. Sorry, I can't say that word. she goes, but we weren't expecting it to show up anything on this. But, you know, we just had to do it. The longer ones will take longer. And have you thought of what you want to do? And we said, yes, we're going to travel. She goes, that's fine. Do you want to come in? I'll scan you and I'll give you the information you need, like your scan reports and report and other stuff, blood types and stuff that they'll need to process your appointment over there. So we went in and we did that, and that was it. We were kind of gone from our hospital in Ireland, and then I made the phone call to Liverpool Women's Hospital that day.
Okay.
Appointment.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's just devastating news to be told that at a anomaly scan. I mean, it's named that for a good reason, I guess, but I think a lot of people feel that once they get to that scan, they're sort of in the home stretch or feeling quite safe, I guess. And so it's never expected that really that you're going to be told anything. You may have a little glimmer of, okay, something could be told to us, but I think everybody sort of feels like it's never going to happen to me.
Yeah. That's it, exactly.
Yeah. The other thing I sort of picked up in there was that you traveled to Liverpool Hospital. So I was interested in that. So I wasn't sure if this was when women have to travel outside of Ireland, do they go to a hospital in the UK or is it an abortion clinic? And I was just interested in what happens there.
Well, when I traveled, so I had obviously had a previous pregnancy and that was a section delivery. So my consultant in Ireland said, she goes, you need to go to a hospital because you've had a section. And I suppose they were kind of feeling if they're passing their care on and they then did not send any referrals or anything like that. They wanted their patients, I suppose, to have the best treatment that they could. So I was told to go to a hospital and she did tell me not to go to a clinic. But we do have women who go to clinics and it's fine. You know, and they've had good experiences there. I had been told I had to go to a hospital because.
Okay. That's for your safety. I had a C-section with Benjamin prior to my TFMR. And so what they're worried about is if they're giving you the induction medication, that can make labor more intense. And there's a worry of tearing and a rupture. And that's obviously an emergency situation for women. So they typically go a lot slower with inducing. And yes, being in a hospital setting in case you need blood transfusions or whatever. Okay. The other part that I was quite interested in was the family support. Where you always felt like you had that full support. What I think I'm interested in is the sort of intersectionality that goes on in Ireland and Northern Ireland between law and the politics, the religion, society. You know, there's lots of different things that are sort of happening here. It's quite complicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, did you feel well supported even within your wider family support and community?
Yeah, I suppose initially we only told our family and they all agreed with us. They were like, there's absolutely no way you could continue with that pregnancy. You'll, you know, you'll run yourself mentally and physically into the ground. And that's not to say that what's right for one isn't right for another. There's plenty of women that I know who have continued and it was the right thing for them. I just knew, I think because there was no fluid around Jess, that just terrified me. I was crushing her. And that's what I was told, that the weight of my organs would eventually most likely be the cause of her death. And that was just horrendous to think of. I was afraid to move once I knew that. But luckily, my family and my husband's family, they were all fully in support of us. We told only a handful of friends the true story in the beginning. And then it was only after we had our next daughter, Hannah, a year later, that I slowly started to tell people in the wider community, because there's a massive fear here that people would judge you. And because it was illegal, that people would tell you that you're doing something wrong. So there was, and there still is, a stigma attached to it. Thankfully, I feel it has lessened greatly since I traveled. You know, it's 8.5 years ago now. But at the time, I was terrified about people knowing my real story. So we had a B story, you know, that I told, like, the baby was sick. I went in for the scan. There was no heartbeat. So they just brought me in that day and induced me. That was my story. And,
yeah,
you know, the local maternity hospital, anyone I know has attended there. So they'd be able to ask me questions. They're like, oh, were you on this ward? Which would have been the miscarriage or baby loss ward. And I was like, oh, no, I was just discharged straight from the labor ward because, you know, I didn't know what else to say. Obviously, now I don't have an A and B story. I just have the story.
Yeah.
But then it would be very common in Ireland that a lot of us, when we do go through this, maybe not so much now, I don't know, but you're so raw from it. You don't want anyone to say anything bad to you. You couldn't take that. So, yeah, no, we definitely, for a long time, over a year, like, we didn't tell many people.
Yeah, you need a safe story, you know, something that, you know, you're comfortable with saying, and you have a fairly good idea of what kind of reaction you will have, rather than, like you said, somebody saying something horrible.
Yeah. And I think it felt like you had to explain, you know, why you traveled. You had to list. I spent so long explaining to people, well, she had this and she had this and she had this wrong with her. And they're like, you know, people in our little community of who've had TFMR, and they're like, you don't need to tell us. And I'm like, oh, okay. But on the outside world, you felt like you had to list your reasons.
Yeah, justify yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, Jen, could you tell us a little bit about what the laws are now? You know, I've been doing a little bit of reading, both with Ireland and Northern Ireland. What's sort of happening now with laws, or what's happened in the last few years? Yeah, so can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so the legislation obviously was passed, or the referendum was passed in 2018, and then it didn't come into effect till the 1st of January 2019 in the Republic of Ireland. I know Northern Ireland have their own set of laws and guidelines and work around that, but in the Republic, it was up to 12 weeks for any reason. Then after that, the way they had set the legislation out is because after 12 weeks, you're in a maternity hospital if it's a pregnancy that you're proceeding with, you know, and their thoughts were people who'll be accessing abortions or terminations after this would be a termination for medical reasons. Obviously, that's not always the case, but that is how it was laid out, and that's how it was to be voted. And given, I suppose, the fact that we have had no legislation for a long time in Ireland, we were just glad to get it to this point at that time. So at the moment, for termination for medical reasons, obviously, once you get a result in the maternity hospital that there is an anomaly with your baby, it's kind of broken into two categories now. It's either fatal and that you can be treated in Ireland, or non-fatal and you still have to travel. It isn't the legislation that if the consultants, and I think it has to be signed off by two, if they feel the baby will not live past 28 days outside the womb, then they could also, that would be classed as a fatal condition as well.
Okay.
And they would be allowed a termination in Ireland. Everything outside of that, unfortunately, people still have to either continue, if that's not what they want to do, obviously they can, or they have to travel abroad for an early induction or a termination for medical reasons.
Okay.
Be the two things we call it.
Something you said when you were explaining your experience, that the dating scan doesn't happen in all hospitals. Is that still current?
As far as I know, so it's very grey still.
Okay.
They are supposed to all have the dating scan and the anomaly scan, but obviously with budget constraints and lack of staff, that doesn't always happen. So in a nutshell, yes, it should be happening, but we don't 100% know if it is.
Is that the excuse because of budget restraints? I mean, I'm going to just say I don't know the answer to in the rest of in UK, in England, Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland. I don't know if dating scans and anomaly scans are definitely happening across all hospitals. But this is the first time I've ever heard the possibility that these are not happening. And is the reason because of budget?
I mean, yeah, it can be like it's resources. They'll say they don't have enough staff, or, you know, that they need to put their staff elsewhere. The main center of excellence hospitals, I suppose you'd call them, the big hospitals that are in Dublin and Cork and Galway and stuff, they would most likely all perform this. But some of the smaller regional hospitals throughout Ireland mind. Now, they have done fantastic work. There was a group set up, and there has been bereavement midwives appointed to, I think, every unit now at this stage. So I think they are. But like I said, we are not 100% sure that there is all these scans being done.
What's your feeling, Jen, on the changes that have been brought in? Are they welcomed by the majority, I guess?
Yes and no. I suppose I'm going from the experience, because obviously it's not relevant to me, but to the women that we're supporting, we have heard such varying stories. We have had consultants fight for their patients for what they know they deserve. And we have had women come to us and tell us that their consultant has literally said, "I'll come back to me next week and we'll see then," basically stringing them along. So by the people who truly want to help women in these circumstances, it has, I think, to a point. Obviously, the legislation does not help everybody, and it does not, I suppose, in terms of some of the medical conditions that there are, the ones that would be grey areas and no definite, like, you know, with Jess, she had no kidneys. There was 100% no chance that she was going to survive. But there is the conditions that even if it's 1% chance, they unfortunately fall outside our legislation. So it's mixed. Like it's more than what we had 3-4 years ago, but it's not enough to help everybody. And there's still a lot of fear around it, I think. Like, we have had women who have contacted us and they've had to travel, and we're like, but that condition is not survivable. Like, we know from our own personal past experiences, and they've gotten as far as England, and the consultants there have said the same. They're like, why are you here? This baby was never going to see life at all. They wouldn't have taken a breath. And so there is a fear, I suppose, amongst the medical profession as well, because the legislation is so tight that people are erring on the side of caution, and we can't blame our medical professionals for that either. They are working to the best of their ability within the constraints of
So their fear is that they could end up being sued or struck off or end up in jail, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because there's quite a lengthy jail term, isn't there?
Yeah,
if you were to be found guilty of this.
Yeah.
14 years, I think I read, something like that.
Yeah, I think that was prior to this. I'm not sure if it's still the same sentence, but I would say it probably is, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I suppose from a medical professional's view, if you are at all worried about that, then you can see why they might err on that side of caution for themselves. So Jen, I wanted to ask you around that, about the support that TFMR Ireland gives to women and families, because I'm also aware that if women decide that they do want to terminate and they have to travel to do this, they can't get it in Ireland, that is at their own cost. And of course, there's going to be people where that becomes a problem. So I wanted to find out what TFMR Ireland offers as support, both emotionally and if there's any financial support, or how you help with that.
So we currently can't provide financial support. We're a really grassroots organisation, and our funding is fairly low, but we do obviously, we're able to help with the emotional and the practical side of it. Like, we've mostly all traveled, so we all have experience of traveling, so we have a vast knowledge in that way. We refer on, because obviously we have had plenty of members who haven't been able to afford it, to Abortion Support Network, and they have been wonderful in helping women and families from Ireland and other countries in Europe get the termination support that they need financially. So when we have to go down that route, they know that we link in with them and they're happy to help with that support. It is costly. I don't know the current figures, because obviously with the pandemic, like, the travel has gone up massively. For myself, our cost approximately 5,000 euros.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was not expecting you to say that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is, you know, and again, it's, we've had members who haven't traveled because they don't have the money. We've had members who have had to take out credit union or bank loans to do this. They've maxed out credit cards.
So not only are you not only have you been given the news that your much wanted and much loved baby is very poorly for whatever reason, and you are faced with this decision to terminate your pregnancy, but you then have debt, financial debt.
Yes.
Added into this.
Yeah. So it's really not a choice that anyone here in Ireland makes lightly when they have to travel abroad, because there's huge financial implications to it. And then if you have other children, you have to find childcare.
Yeah.
You don't know how long you might be going over for. Like, we've had some people that have been gone for a week because their induction took longer than planned. You know, like, it's like anything in maternity. There is no absolutes.
And presuming if you don't have a supportive family or friend network, this adds to that.
Yeah, we have had mothers who have had to go over on their own because they've had no one to mind their children. Their husband or partner has had to stay home to mind their other children.
Yeah, I'm a bit speechless, really.
We have a lot of horror stories out of Ireland.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's just wrong. It's just something that no woman should have to go through by herself. And I know these COVID times have made it even harder as well. Mm. I guess I'm just thinking about my own support that I had. And if I had to have gone through what I went through on my own.
It's unthinkable, really.
Yeah. And I know that it would have impacted my healing and grieving afterwards.
Yeah. That's how I feel as well. Like, when we're hearing from mothers who have gone over, and obviously with the restrictions, even if their partner or husband is able to travel with them, a lot of them can't go in.
Mm.
And I just can't believe that there's parents out there who aren't even getting, like, say if they want to see their baby, the father can't. And I think that just changes your healing journey with your husband. We all know that men and women grieve differently at their own pace, separate times, and it can cause friction. But imagine you seeing your baby, but your partner hasn't. How much more that can throw up into a relationship in the process of grief and bereavement. It's unthinkable, and it's something that we are learning about quite rapidly as supporters in our organization. But we feel ill-equipped, I suppose, because it's not something we've gone through. I had my husband at my side for the entirety, from the moment we got the news to the moment we arrived home. He was there.
Yeah. Are you hearing what is coming through about the trauma left from that? So, you know, it's TFMR is traumatic enough on its own. You know, this added part of being away from home, not having your loved ones close, all of that we are saying, are you hearing the trickle effect of what's
absolutely
the back end of this?
Yeah. It's always been a massive part of termination in Ireland. It's the stigma, it's the travel, it's another, we always would explain it in our support meeting, it's another layer on top of your grief. Mm. You're not just grieving the loss of your baby, you're not just grieving the fact that you had to make a choice, you're grieving the fact that you had to leave your country, you had to leave your supports, you had to leave your hospital, you had to find a new hospital or clinic, you had to make all these new connections on your own, because the majority of us all had to make our phone calls to these clinics and hospitals, and a lot still have to. You have to find your own way. You have no support to book a ferry if that's what you want to do. You have no support to get a plane. You have to do all these steps yourself. And it has changed slightly. There are some hospitals who are helping a lot more now, and they're sending, say, even the referral. Like, for myself, I had to ring Liverpool, and when I spoke to the midwife, she said, can you read the report to me? So I had to read out the report, and as soon as I got to absent kidneys, she said, you don't need to say anymore, just fax that through to me, please. How do you find a fax machine when you're at home on sick leave because you've had this news? You know, like, so that was another step that we had to do, and it's still a step. Thankfully now we have phones that you can take a photo and attach to emails, but you're doing everything yourself. So that trauma has always been there, you know, that the fact that you had to travel. Now it's unfortunately a trauma that you've had to travel and go through an induction or a termination, whatever way method you've gone for, on your own mostly.
Mm.
It's unthinkable, but that's what we are. We are hearing an awful lot of it. I think the trauma for travel, that's been a lot around a long time, and for as long as women will have to travel, it will be there.
Yeah, it's there's something about that criminality that's attached to it, you know, that you're considered a criminal in your own country. you touched on it, you know, earlier about how you kept your story, you had a B story.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine it just adds to that sense of shame.
Yeah. And now we find, and it's not to, you know, say that it was wrong to put the legislation in Ireland, but now that we have women who still have to travel, they feel even worse. They're like, I voted for this. I thought I'd be taken care of, and I'm still being sent away. You know, we're at the other end of emails and phone calls, and we're like, we're really sorry, because we campaigned for this. And I think we thought that the legislation would go further, that a lot more women would be taken care of under this legislation. But unfortunately, we're not seeing that. And we're heartbroken, like, by the phone calls we get in. And people are very unaware in Ireland that people are still traveling.
Right. Okay.
You know, and we feel ourselves, maybe we haven't been vocal enough, and we probably haven't. But after the referendum, we were burnt out. Like, we just went to ground, really. Like, none of us had any energy for anything. I think for a lot of the long term members who did campaign, our grief and campaigning went hand in hand. We literally, like, I came home, I had Jess, I went to my first support meeting the following month, and I was involved because I needed to do something. So it was, for most of us, we literally hit the ground running in the midst of grief. And I suppose the referendum passing gave us a chance to just pause. And all that exhaustion from all those many years of fighting for something that we so truly believed should be here, it finally got to us. And it's only kind of now that we've gotten our spark back, and we feel invigorated to kind of fight again for the other women that, you know, haven't been covered in the legislation.
Yeah, we've heard this a lot about just that bit about, you know, driving the grief into something.
Yeah.
A lot of women, me included, feel that, you know, we need somewhere for this to go. And it touches on legacy as well, that, you know, you don't want to think that your baby's life has sort of counted for nothing, that you've been through all of this and that they'll just be forgotten. So it gives us something to remember them by.
Yeah, I feel as well, and it's something I've spoken about previously, is so Jess's heart was stopped at 23 weeks and 6 days so that I would not have to register in England as a death, because they didn't want to delay us getting home. You know, they know that we're traveling. And she was born at 24 weeks. And she has nothing. She is nowhere. She has no official record. In 100 years' time, you'd be able to check all my children, living children. You'd be able to check all my grandkids. But she's nowhere. And that broke me. And that's part of the reason why I went so public with my story, because I wanted her lifetime to be there, to be highlighted. So at least I feel I have done that for her. I know not everyone can do that, or not everyone wants to do that, but for me, that was really important.
Yeah. I hear that. That's sort of how I feel a lot about things as well. I'm really interested as well of what, you know, you said you got this legislation through, and you've all had to take a bit of a step back and just rest up, it sounds like. That's what I'm hearing, a sort of rest up and get the armor on again to go back into battle, because it sort of feels like that. This isn't over yet. What's next? What's coming?
So when the legislation was passed, they wrote in that there would be a 3-year review. So that's this year. We are 3 years in. So there will be a review. We don't know what form or shape that will take. So at the moment, we are just gathering ourselves. We are getting, I suppose for us, we were storytellers for the referendum. We told our story. That was primarily what we did. And we explained to people, you know, like, we are real people and we've gone through these experiences. I suppose the older members, we do not want to put women through what we went through, as in having to tell our story over and over and over. It's exhausting. It's kind of, I always feel, and we only spoke about this briefly amongst ourselves recently, that I feel I've lost Jess in her story, because I've told it so often and I've had a break of like 2.5 years of doing it. So I finally feel I've gotten it back and I can tell it in my own way again. We don't want to put anyone else through that, but we will need women to come forward and tell us their stories. Now, we're not going to put them on TV or media or anything like that unless that's what they want, because obviously we've all been there as well and we wanted to do what we did. But we will need people to understand that women are still traveling and that the legislation is not doing what we feel it was set out to do. So we're gathering our stories, we are getting kind of reports and figures and whatever we can do. Not every woman who gets a diagnosis and has to travel or gets access to a termination Ireland comes to us. So obviously our figures won't be 100%. So we are working with other organisations to try capture that. And I suppose we're just writing from our own experience of what we still feel needs to be done and how it's affecting women, that there's kind of a divide, you know, like that the term has been thrown around an awful lot, you know, your baby wasn't fatal enough to receive, you know, for your baby's condition was not fatal enough for you to get a termination in Ireland. And that's just not good enough.
Mm. Are you worried that there could be a U-turn on what you already have?
Yeah, there could very well be. We know that the people who campaigned against us and against repealing the Eighth Amendment, they are probably working very hard to gather everything they can to change this back. I'm not sure who is going to be on the review board. We do know there's a number of ministers have been appointed in roles and they would be very much anti-terminations and anti-abortion. So they will most likely campaign heavily to reverse or lessen the services that we have. So, you know, there is a fight and we are aware of that, you know, ourselves and not just ourselves, obviously the many organisations that did fight first time around and for many years, like 30 plus years in Ireland, everyone is gathering what they can to put the best fight in that we can to maybe strengthen our services, hopefully, but definitely retain what we have.
I'm sort of interested in this, that political, you know, the women make up 50% or 51%. I think we're slightly more than men, aren't we? You know, so what is, do you have a sense of what the average person wants?
I suppose just going by the 2018, the referendum, like we won by, God, what was it? I can't even remember now.
It's 60 something percent, wasn't it?
Yeah. 8 or something percent. So the majority obviously did want change and do want change. So I'm presuming that is still the same, if not more, like that we've had women who've came to us and that, you know, like I suppose for the likes of me, I was in that world. So the referendum was really important. But I know people who it wouldn't have been important to because they were like, oh, that's not going to affect me. Mm. And it has since affected them. Mm. And now they might be in vigor to, you know, that there needs more change. So hopefully that number of people who want change, want the change to remain, has grown.
Mm. And Jen, I just want to go back a step. You know, you were talking about other people, you know, when this referendum happened, and they may have not even voted because they felt it didn't affect them. And now it does. I was just interested in your own sort of thought process before your own termination. Was it something that you had opinions about before it happened to you? Was it something you'd thought about?
Yeah, the original four women who set up TFMR Ireland, I've told them this story a million times. I remember reading their article. So they were the first women to really put their faces in a newspaper and say, we have had a termination. I remember reading that and going, that's awful. And clicking out of it and carrying on my life. I didn't really have strong opinions, but I would have never held the opinion that someone shouldn't have an abortion if that's not what they wanted. So I've always been pro-choice. I just maybe haven't been. I wasn't as out about it and as vocal. I knew people who had abortions. It didn't, you know, like that didn't faze me. I didn't think less of them. It just wasn't something that had crossed my radar personally. So I suppose for me it was very much once it became a personal, you know, something that had crossed me personally, then I became very vocal about it. But I never say flipped from the other side from pro-life to pro-choice. I always have maintained it's your life and you do what you want with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I was just thinking about, you know, a few months ago we had in Poland, we had the news that they recently backtracked on some legislation that they had put in place maybe a year or two previously, and that they were reducing the gestational limit and the reasons as well, this whole fatal or non-fatal and gray area thing. You know, when you see stories like that, what does that do to you? Because you're in a similar position. You know, do you give much sort of thought around that?
Yeah, it's when you see that, like, we thought we got so far to get the legislation that we have, which is still extremely restrictive in Ireland, but it was a start. And then you see like that Poland, who I can't remember the dates, but it very similar timelines that they've already reduced that and taken some of it away. It's scary because it's like people don't have an abortion or have a termination for a medical reason for non-important reasons. You know, like, there's been a lot of thought into this on the part of the woman and couple or partner, you know, whoever else is involved. So to take something, you've placed it into legislation, to take it out, just, it's cruel. Like, restricting healthcare for women is what it is.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't happen. Unfortunately, it keeps happening though.
Well, I remember when that story came on and it was on the radio that I heard it, and we were in the car and I just hit the roof of the car basically. And I was fuming for the rest of the day and feeling really sick, actually. Because the language used is usually around, well, what it made me think of is that what people who are in opposition to this tend to make it out is that, exactly as you say, it's some sort of flippant decision.
Yeah.
And that we're not in our right minds, or we're a danger to our own fetuses, babies, you know. And it just made me so angry. How dare you think that I have made a decision without thinking about it?
Yeah.
I've never met anybody who's been through this who hasn't, you know, really been devastated by the news that they're given.
Yeah. It's not an easy decision to make. And that's what we always have campaigned saying, you know, we have given this thought. Like, I didn't get the news and think, oh, sure, like, what's $5,000?
Yeah,
let's do this. It was, my baby is going to suffer horrendously. Mm. You know, to the point even our consultant told us, if she by some chance was born alive, she would suffocate to death because her lungs would not work. And I'm sure there's people who have continued with similar diagnoses that I had. But that just struck me. I was like, why would I put my child, that I can do something about this? I can take pain for her. I can make this decision and carry that decision that I've made so that she doesn't feel this pain. And especially because Jess had the really severe spina bifida. They did explain that she would, you know, like, that it would be painful if she was being born, and that her, like, they went so far to tell me that her spine would most likely snap during the labor process. Imagine if she had been alive for that. That just, you know, and even the thoughts of labor, like, labor is hard. Labor is stressing, and it's worthy for a baby that's going to live and has a potential to live, but for a baby like Jess, who was going to die no matter what, the thought of putting the pains of labor and the contractions and all onto her little body, it was too much. And I think only if you've been in the situation, and not even if you have had a termination, if you have continued, you've given this the thought, and those people understand what we've all been through. And yes, I know plenty of women who have continued, and that's what they wanted to, and they hoped to meet their baby alive, and they're glad that they did, even if it was for such a fleeting time as a matter of minutes. But they have gone through this thought process. And I think people who fight against us, you know, who are restricting this legislation, you know, in Poland and in Ireland, they haven't been in our shoes. They haven't sat there while consultants and medical teams have told us the horrendousness of our baby situations and, you know, how it's going to be for us as well. Like, we were told if we delivered in Ireland and there was some chance that she was going to be born alive, they'd have the pain team and the palliative care team on standby, because she would be in that horrendous pain from the moment she was born, that they would then help her pain. But they couldn't do anything while she was in my womb.
Yeah. Yeah. It's impossible situation to be in as a parent.
Yeah.
And it's never taken lightly, and it's never a sort of flippant, oh, well, you know, we'll try again next time. It's never like that.
Yeah. And that's what we always tell our parents. You know, it doesn't matter what decision you come to, whether you decide to terminate early or compassionate induction early or continue, once it is what you want to do and what it is the best choice for you and your family.
Mm.
You know, and that's what we've always maintained. We are like, we always, it's non-directive. We don't get people come on to us and we say, oh, well, you have to terminate because your baby has this condition and God, you couldn't continue with that. We are just an ear for women to let us know what they need. You know, and if it is a case that they decide to travel, then we can give them their practical information. But if they decide we're going to continue, we're still there for support every step of the way until that baby is born and after.
Mm.
That's what women need. They don't need people telling them what they should and should not do.
Yeah.
They just need support in these circumstances.
Yeah, we're perfectly capable of knowing what we need or what we should and shouldn't do. And we can figure that out. We just need the support. You're right. Jen, I wanted to ask, you know, you mentioned about your grief being poured into TFMR Ireland and the campaigning. How did life sort of look after Jess's death? And you as a family, how have you sort of incorporated that grief or that loss of Jess as a family?
From the moment we found out that she wouldn't come home to stay, it was so important to us that she would be included. You know, that she was remembered and counted. I would always say that I have, you know, depending on the circumstances, I would say I have four children at home, so I'm not discounting her. And I've had lots of other bereaved mothers who I didn't know their circumstances, and they didn't know mine, but they would pick up on that. Mm. Or anyone who's had even a miscarriage, you know, they'd be like, you said at home, are you? And I'd be like, yes. And they're like, I love that. And I've had other people come back and say, it's how they now capture, you know, they might have had multiple losses, but capture their, you know, single child at home or their, you know, however many. So she was always to be counted, and she very much is. You know, we have her pictures up. We were lucky that we got lots of photos, and she looked beautiful, and they're photos that we don't mind sharing. We got a beautiful painting done of her scan photo by a local Dublin artist, and it's like, to me, it's the most beautiful thing in the world because she's alive in it. Mm. Because obviously when she was born, she wasn't. And so that was a really important piece. It's just simple things we do. You know, we like, she's very locally to where we live, so we can visit her whenever we want. A lot of parents get ashes back, which is another lovely way. And, you know, some of our members have had the ashes put into a teddy bear. Mm. So that the teddy bear is there and the kids can pick it up and hug it, or they can hug it. Or else they just have, you know, a beautiful little box and they'd keep the ashes on a special location, like a fireplace or in their bedroom and stuff. You know, thankfully our family are very open. It's not taboo, like they will mention her. She is very much counted. My mother-in-law and father-in-law both had significant birthdays last year, and a neighbor of them got like a family tree done of them and their children and, you know, the in-laws and all the grandkids, and there was Jess named on it.
No, that's lovely.
Yeah, you know, like it's just nice for her to be included in those sort of ways, and that's what I wanted. The children, so we obviously had Ava before Jess, so she always knew about Jess, and then we've been lucky enough to go on and have three more since, and they all know about Jess. Mm. Obviously they range from 7 to 2, so their understanding of it varies, but they know they have a sister, Jess, who lives in the sky, and you know, we talk about her. We have little teddies that we had bought when we found out she was going to die, and we gave her some and we kept some, so we have them, so they know they can give Jess's teddy a hug. We did have 6. I can currently find 2. They're only tiny, this like kind of the palm of your hand size. They're floating around the house somewhere.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the joy of it as well, is that it'll just pop up somewhere and be like, ah, someone obviously took it and it's here hidden away and we'll find it again. And yeah, we talk about her. We have, you know, a candle that we light on special occasions, you know, to remember her, and you know, it'd be my candle that I'd light for someone if they're going through a hard time. And I just find something about the flickering of a candle just very, I don't know, emotive and therapeutic, and just it gives me some sense of calm and healing. And yeah, we just, you know, like she's just always kind of been there.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, I think because we are so, people know that about us, they then in turn involve her when they're speaking to us. Like I'd have a lot of friends who'd be like, sure, Jen has five kids, you know, they'd straight away, no matter who they're talking to, would say it. Or even if they write us a card, they'd include her name on it.
Yeah.
You know, and those little things to us are really important, because like that, it's her legacy, and it'll only be carried through people speaking about her.
Yeah.
For us, that's important.
Yeah. Got a real sense of Jess and what she means, not just to you as your, you know, your immediate family, but your extended family and your friends as well. And it's really lovely to hear that she has impacted all of these other people as well. It's, I think it's what a lot of us hope for our babies,
that they
have an impact on others. So it's really, really lovely to hear that. So we're going to wrap it up now. And one of the things that we do is we call it our TFMR takeaways, and we ask all of our guests this. So Jen, what piece of advice or hope would you give to women and families who are either facing a TFMR or who have undergone a TFMR?
I suppose my biggest piece of advice would be to find the people who are going to support you. Brush away the negativity, people who aren't going to do you any good. I think you find them very quick after any sort of a loss. But surround yourself with the people who are going to help to hold you up, because that's what you need. You need to find your village. For me, my village is my TFMR Ireland and LMC bereavement family. They are my go-to when I'm having a bad day. They know me. They know what I mean when I speak about certain things. And I just think that's really important. You need support. Women and families, they need to find their support. And that could just be a neighbor, you know, or someone that they're really close to. It could just be family. But find that and speak openly about it. Don't push down your grief or your loss because you are afraid to make other people uncomfortable. This is our reality, and you're walking in that every day. Those shoes, unfortunately, are firmly attached to our feet. Don't hide that just because you're afraid you'll make your neighbor or a friend uncomfortable because you bring up your loss, because you'll walk away from that conversation feeling crap that you didn't mention them when you wanted to, or you know, you didn't count your child when you wanted to count them in a conversation. And that'll sit in you. Whereas if you say to someone, yes, I've lost a baby, and you tell them your story, and yeah, they might feel really uncomfortable, but they'll walk away and forget about that. And at least you know that you've said in that moment what you wanted to say about your loss or your grief, and you haven't pushed it down, because when you keep pushing it down, it's only going to come out eventually, and it'll be the hardest wave that you'll get. So just keep talking, I suppose, is my biggest thing that I always say. Keep talking about it if that's what you want to do. You know, don't push anything down, and don't make anyone feel that you shouldn't speak about your loss or your grief or your baby, because you will only end up resenting yourself for not mentioning them in those times.
And I think in a way of being able to speak about it, whether that's to lots of people or one other person, but I think in being able to talk about it, it helps to start dissipating the shame that surrounds this.
Absolutely.
For ourselves.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jen. It's been really wonderful having you on. Thank you for being so open and honest. Yeah. I really appreciate your time with us.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed speaking with you today. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about Jess again. I do enjoy doing it.
We've loved hearing about her. So I want to thank everyone for listening once again. You can subscribe to the podcast. That's probably the best way to get our most up-to-date episode releases. And you can also follow us on all of our social media accounts, which are Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Time to Talk TFMR. So that's goodbye until next time. Please take gentle care of yourselves. Bye.